Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Jim, for the invitation. Thank you, Francois, for the warm welcome yesterday. It's a great pleasure to be here and have the opportunity to participate in all these debates. I won't discuss the Spanish chapter. It's an excellent account on how Spain shifted from being an immigration country to an immigration country and then back to an immigration country combined with still being an immigration country. I would like to reflect upon the dilemmas behind migration control, but vis-a-vis the Spanish case. Our starting point, or at least the starting point of the book, is that controlling migration is a challenge. The challenge is not control or regulation as such, but the challenge is how to solve the dilemma between the economics of migration, which demand for open policies, and the politics of migration, political, legal, and security concerns that ask for greater control. Let me say that this is not particular or unique to liberal democracies. I would say that this is characteristic of most, or even, let's say, all nation states. What is unique to liberal democracies is that this dilemma turns into a trilemma. A trilemma between market demands for openness, political demands for closure, and then rights constraints. In response to this trilemma, the book starts with a question: how can countries be simultaneously open and closed to migration? And taking this question and focusing on the Spanish case, the question would be whether Spain was simultaneously open and closed to migration. If we look at numbers, Spain seems to have been quite open to migration. In fact, as your chapter shows, the percentage of registered foreigners raised from 2% in 2000 to 12% in 2012. More than 4 million new immigrants in just 10 years. So this seems to suggest that demands for openness were given priority over demands for closure, at least for the Spanish case. However, if we look at Spanish immigration policies in more detail, taking into account different policy measures as well as policy implementation and policy outcomes, we should introduce two important nuances. First of all, entry policies worked in a rather restrictive way. First, because the first foreigners law from 1985 was in fact promulgated to block entry to migrants en route to Western Europe. So it was a very restrictive foreigners law. But more important, entry policies were and have and are restrictive in actual practice, basically because they have very long and very complex procedures, which makes entry a very complex and very complicated process. But still, even with very restrictive entry policies, numbers were very high from 2000 to 2010. Why? You know the answer, because basically it was regularization programs would turn Spain into rather open immigration policies. So in fact, regularization policies functioned as real as the actual entry policy. The second nuance, following Martin Rus' trade-off between numbers and rights, while access to papers was relatively easy through all these periodic regularization programs, residence has been made conditional to labor integration during the first 5 years. Without a formal employment, immigrants could not renew their residence permits. This meant that many of them fell back into irregularity. And in fact, this is what partly explains the Spanish model of illegal migration. It was not just about irregular crossings, it was not just about migrants arriving with a visa, getting a job, and finally regularizing, but it was also about migrants, regular migrants, falling back into irregularity. All in all, the conclusion is that in Spain, all has depended on a job offer. Entry depends on a job offer, though entry didn't really work in practice, or not in relevant numbers. Regularization has depended on a job offer. Up to 2005, It depended on the job offer since 2005 on actual employment, but still it's the same idea. And renewal during the first 5 years of residence has also depended on having an actual employment. So in fact, if we look at migration policies from this perspective, they are not so far from European guest workers. Migrants are invited and expected to remain as long as they are required by employers. The dominance of employment, which is what at the end determines who is in and who is out, means that migration policies are not open and closed per se. It depends on the economic situation. In periods of economic growth, it's easy to get the job offer, so it's easy to regularize and it may be easy to renew your residence permit. But in periods of economic downturn, the same policies become tremendously restrictive. But it could be partial to conclude that the market is what decides, the job offer is what decides. Rights have also been fundamental in the Spanish case in two different ways. First of all, over the years, most long-term immigrants managed to obtain permanent residence and, at the end, as well, Spanish citizenship. And second, irregular immigrants are not completely excluded. They are documented at the local level through El Padrón, the municipal census, and they have access to basic social services, and after 3 years, they have the right to regularize if they get the famous job offer. So that's what explains, I would say, why migration control in Spain in the last years have particularly focused at the border and beyond. Most migration developments or migration policy developments have to do with migration control, and more than that, with externalization of migration control to neighboring countries. In fact, Spain has functioned as a laboratory of European policies for the externalization of migration control. So Spain has constructed a thick border, particularly with regard to African countries, while it has maintained a thin border vis-a-vis Latin American countries. Thin in terms of visa policy and thin as well, as your chapter shows, in terms of access to citizenship. Let me finish by referring to one last issue, and this is asylum. In fact, this is not a central issue in your chapter, but I think that it's significant, we should refer to it as well. Indeed, numbers are not very significant, though they have grown a lot in the last few years. In 2012, Spain got around 2,000 asylum applications, 2,000 in 2012, so this is nothing. But in 2018, the number raised to more than 55,000. Still, it's not much if we compare it to Germany or if we compare it to the 600,000 new migrants that entered annually Spain from 2000 to 2006. But yet, I think that it has important implications, at least symbolic implications, because for the first time, Spain has become a country of asylum, and this means that for the first time, not all depends on the job offer. The deserving migrant is not anymore, or not only, the migrant worker with a job, but also the refugee escaping from war and beyond. But again, if we look at implementation and outcomes, things are much more complex because asylum seekers are expected to be quite autonomous after 6 months. And then at the end of the asylum procedure, 3 out of 4 will see their application rejected. This means that at the end, labor integration is what matters at the end. First of all, to reach this expected autonomy after 6 months, and later to be able to regularize after their asylum application rejected. And now let me conclude by reflecting or sharing some thoughts on the convergence and gap hypothesis vis-a-vis the Spanish case. Indeed, the Spanish case shows convergence, and this is clear, it's part of the European integration process, but still it's quite different. In this sense, Spain is not as trivial and normal as Italy. Limited conversion is, may I have an extra 1 minute? Basically, there is no conversion regarding access to membership, access to residence and to citizenship. And this has to do with the fact that this access to membership is still shaped by particular notions of nationhood, notions of nationhood that are defined far, far beyond Spanish borders. And here, of course, I'm referring to Latin America. And at the same time, and this is very important, are contested within its borders. And here, of course, I'm referring to Catalonia. And I would say that this contestation from within explains why anti-immigration discourses have not developed or not developed yet. There is no consensus what it means to be a Spaniard. And in fact, the other is inside. So there is no need to build this other outside. And of course, this has to do as well to what Leo Lucassen said this morning. I think that in Spain we are still in this ethical revolution, high political correctness on the one hand, and a broad, or quite broad consensus not to politicize immigration. So this, with regard to the convergence hypothesis, let me just say a few sentences about the gap hypothesis, because this is my main argument. In fact, if we look at the gap between public and policymakers, there is not such a big gap in the sense that, for instance, regularization programs did not produce significant hostility and was not the case either during the economic crisis. But if we look at the gap between policy goals and outcomes, of course, here we have a clear gap because entry policies are quite restrictive and still we have high numbers. And this is produced as a consequence of regularization programs. But my argument here is that this should not be as a policy failure or as a policy gap. This is a policy in itself, and this is precisely the way to reconcile conflicting and contradictory demands. Thank you.
Thank you, Blanca.